Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, Rabbi Isai, it's a tradition here in Or Sameach that we have these Shiurim Hoshana Rabbah nights, as we know. The minute to learn Torah is stay up all night. This is the Yom HaDin, the final day of judgment. And it's really multifaceted. So on the one hand, we're finishing up Sukkot. On the other hand, we're preparing for Shmini Atzeres, Simchat Torah, which is really part of Sukkot, because it's Shmini Atzeres, which is the eighth day of Sukkot. And yet, we make a Shechiyanu, because it's a separate chag into itself, Shmini Atzeres. And at the same time, it's still Sukkot today, so we have to try to include Sukkot in this. And one thing that's always bothered me is that we also lay Zosa Bracha. And really, that's the parsha that sort of gets shunted off to the side. Now, somebody told me a fascinating thing. They said that whenever Rav Shach would see anybody, and would come to greet him during Sukkot, he would always say, make sure and finish being Marba the Sedra on Hoshana Rabbah. Because those who know that there is a mitzvah to say to learn the parasha, Shtar Mikra Ve'echa Targum. Some people are careful to do it also with Rashi. So you know that you have to have it finished before normally you say before the laning. He says, no, Shmini Atzeres is already too late. You have to have it finished before Shmini Atzeres. So today on Hoshana Rabbah, you have to finish it. This is when we finish the mitzvah of Shai Mikri Echatagos. There's a lot of stuff to cover tonight, and a lot of different levels. And I want to try to start approaching these things, and I want to start it with an interesting observation. I was once doing a question and answer session for a group of non-religious Jews. Oh, traditional Jews, perhaps. And this one woman said, why is it that we do Yizkor on the Shal Shagom? On Pesach, Sukkot, and Shavuot, we know that we say Yizkor. Why is that? Why do we remember the people who passed away? So the answer is, I haven't the slightest idea. But you can't do that in an after rabbi session. So luckily, when you're dealing with people who aren't too knowledgeable, you can make up whatever you want on the spot. I basically built a career on that principle. So the answer I gave her that occurred to me, and it might even be true, is because there's a special idea of remembering our loved ones, the ones who went before us, specifically on the holidays. Because there's a time of year, and the Sholosh Regalim is certainly that time of year, when we're keenly aware of everything that went before us. Let's take Pesach. There are people to whom tradition itself may not be that important. But when it comes to the Pesach Seder, people get absolutely insane in how my parents did it. Even if my parents clearly did it wrong. You understand? It doesn't make a difference. Pesach is Pesach. And if my father always used this for carpets, I'm going to use this for carpets. And if my father always did it this way. And etc. Whatever the nigunim were that they used to sing. If we remember them, we don't remember them, but we'll croak them out in any way that we can. It brings that back that idea. And this woman was very happy with that response. It might be true. I know it's certainly true for me. And I know it's certainly true for Sukkot. Sukkot was a holiday that had special meaning to my father. Because my father was a florist. And now, I lived in North Merrick, Long Island. Right? You may possibly have heard of Merrick, Long Island. That's a Jewish neighborhood. North Merrick is Italian Catholic, and I lived within walking distance of Sacred Heart. Unfortunately, I wasn't Catholic, so I had to take a bus to my yeshiva. But there weren't many sukkahs in North Merrick. There was mine and the synagogue. That was it. And my father took this very seriously. He used to make a wooden frame, and then he would nail trellises on. If you know what trellises are, like at the entrance to a garden, they have those trellises. And then he would wire on fresh cedar greens on the inside and outside. That's how he made the walls. And he used fresh cedar for the top. And then he put on straw flowers and autumn leaves and Indian corn and gourds, and it was just absolutely beautiful. It was just something that was alive. The sukkah was something that was alive, and the smells and the feelings were essential. So there's memory. I went off to yeshiva. I went to yeshiva Chavetz Chaim, and you know, there's a minhag in America on Shmini Atzeres, because they sit in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres. Here we do it on Rosh Hashanah Rabbah, because Shmini Atzeres to us is the longest sukkah. That as you leave the sukkah, you have, you know, a little suda for that refreshment. You sing zmiras, you sing certain songs, and you share ideas. It's a beautiful thing. And my Rosh Yeshiva of Henoch Leibowitz, when Chavetz Chaim, this was a very beautiful thing. Everybody would get together, and he'd sing certain zmiras. And one of the songs he sang was a Yiddish song that, believe it or not, I'm going to sing for you now. Now, I say believe it or not for a number of reasons. One is, of course, everyone thinks they're coming to a shir and not to hear a song. Don't worry, it won't really be a song, the way I sing. So that's number one. Number two is it's in Yiddish, which is kind of unusual because I don't speak Yiddish. Yiddish was my parents' secret language. When they wanted to speak to each other and didn't want us to know what was going on, they spoke in Yiddish. You understand? So you try to pick up key words to try to find out, but you couldn't really understand it. To this day, any language that has the word gebanged in it, you know what I mean? To me, it's like, you know, how seriously can you take it, you know? So, I happened, you know, last year we spoke a little bit about Yiddish, and we pointed out how Yiddish is basically English with a thick accent. You know what I mean? A lot of the words are very similar. Because a lot of English actually comes from German as well. Obviously, the Anglo-Saxons were Germanic. But, so there's a lot of the words that are similar. But besides that, I don't really speak Yiddish, so I'm going to try to sing this Yiddish song, taking into account the fact that I don't speak Yiddish. There are definitely people here who do speak Yiddish, and if you hear me making any major blunders, feel free to call it out. If they're minor blunders, be quiet. Nobody really cares that much. There's nothing worse than telling a joke to a group of Jews. You understand? Because afterwards they have to correct you. No. It wasn't on a Tuesday, it was a Wednesday. Well, you'll tell this whole joke, you know what I mean? I was like, no, that's not how it goes. And there were three people instead of two people. You know what I mean? They tell the whole joke over and they're like... Anyway, so minor errors, don't worry about. You understand? But this is it. This is actually from a little-known publication called the Yavne Shiron, which is the only place I've ever found this published. It's because one of the people who published it was a Chavetz Chaim guy, and he obviously got this. I would have sing it in Yiddish. If you don't understand Yiddish, I'll translate it for you afterwards. But there's a reason I'm singing this. One is, of course, that it's extremely nostalgic. The second one is I didn't have that much time to prepare this year, so I thought I'd kill some time by singing a long Yiddish song. But the truth is that there's an important message, and this is always an important message. Okay. Asukala Akraina Fundrasala Gemena Havikmi Asukala Gema Zudegdem Da Mitabisala Sa Zitifmir Him Sukala Bana Sayaya Zudegdem Da mit der Bissala Sach zit es mir in Sukkala Bana a Sukkala Kleina, a little Sukkah from Brekla to Meina, I made it from little boards. Habich mir a Sukkala gemacht, I made a Sukkah zudeck dem Dach, I covered the top mit der Bissala Sach with a Bissala Sach zit es mir I sit in Sukkala Bana night at night. A wind, a kaufen, a cold wind. Bleus doch die Spalten, und der letzte Lach, they lash sich still. This wind, the cold wind is blowing, and the little lights, the candles are flickering. Emiz mir achidish, v'ech mach mir kiddish. In the left alone, they brand can still. Ay, 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 Mizmiachidish. Everyone. Zirich machikidish. In the left alone, they brand can still. Mita. Kiddish, as I make my kiddish, and the left alone, very still. Samaritan, Gerich, the first call. Metaploizin, Gizir, with a pale face. Bent mir mein Techtelach herein. My daughter brings it to me. Zishtel Zicha Vech, Unzok Nitzvech. Tatele de Sukkha Balt Ein. Ay, 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 ay. Zishtel Zicha Vech. She stands back. Unzok Nitzvech. And says the Sira. Ay, Tatele de Sukkha Balt Ein. The Sukkha is about to collapse. Dein ist kein da. Don't be stupid. Hoch nicht kein da. Don't be afraid. Soll dir die Sucke nicht tun bang. Sucke is not going to fall down. Im ich wein gar. It's already about 2,000 years. About 2,000 years. Und der Sucke los ist steht nach ganz lang. Ja, 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 ja. Am hier schon gar, but 2,000 Jahre, und der Sukkulos ist jetzt nach ganz lang. It's already 2,000 years, and the Sukkulos still stands. Well, like everything in Yiddish, it's depressing. I've never heard the Yiddish version of Happy Birthday, but I'm sure it's the Yiddish I don't know what they're saying, but it's always heartbreaking. He's giving you directions to the Makola. But of course, it tells us that the little sukkah has been standing for 2,000 years, which obviously describes our Jewish existence, which means that we're sitting in a little temporary hut, traveling from location to location, being oppressed, being persecuted, exiled, killed, beaten, hated, despised. You know what I'm saying? All the things that make us happy to be Jews. You know that? Anti-Semitism, oppression, exile. And somehow, that's brought out as the theme of sukkahs. Isn't that beautiful? Now, the truth of the matter is that the song is based on a concept, and the concept is brought down in the Yalkut Shimoni, a Medrash Yalkut Shimoni, that is brought at the end of Parshas Emor, that says the following. Lama anu osin sukkah acha Yom Kippur. Why do we make a sukkah after Yom Kippur? Lama lefa. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sits in judgment of everybody in the world on Rosh Hashanah. And he signs the din, the judgment, on Yom Kippur. Shema Yotza Dinon Shal Yisrael L'Golus. Maybe it's been decreed that we're going to go into exile. The Yidei Kain Oisin Sukkah. So, what do? We build a sukkah, the golan mibatehem, the sukkah. We exile ourselves from our house to the sukkah. And the Kodesh Baruch Hu considers as if we were exiled to Babylonia. So there you go. Here, all the beautiful things we've talked about in past years about the sukkah, and about how nice it is, and the kedusha and everything, and now we're cutting to the chase. This is exile. We leave our house and go into a temporary hut, a dwelling without a roof over our head. Because this is to symbolize Golus. We are exiling ourselves, and that's what Sukkah says. A very happy holiday. It's exile. It's supposed to capture the feeling of exile. A little depressing. Now, the truth of the matter is, we know, the Medrash says, in a number of places, that the Shalosh Regalim correspond to the Avos, to the forefathers. Abraham is Pesach, and Yitzchak is Shavuos, and Yaakov is Sukkah. So they quote Sukkim to support this position. And you know that Yaakov represents Golus. Obviously. He went into Golus. He left Israel, he ran away from his brother, he went to Laban. The Jewish people were conceived, with the exception of Binyamin, were conceived and born in Golus. And that's where we became a people. And that's where he leaves, and then he comes back. And then he once again goes into exile in Egypt, and he dies in exile. A rather depressing life. That's no Abraham. Abraham is, you know, is downright cheerful. You understand? He comes down, he wins all the wars, everything is terrific, he watches his son do tshuva, he watches his daughter go there, everything turns out good. Right? Yaakov dies in exile. And he has to get his son to swear to him that he won't bury him in Egypt and take him back to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. That's Yaakov. Abraham establishes a tefillah called Shachar. Yitzchak Mincha and Yaakov Meir. Fascinating. Somebody, this evidently is a very old joke, but of course, like all things, it comes to me late, you know. Someone said, who's the real yeshiva guy? Abraham or Choni Amagel? Now, why should Abraham be the real yeshiva guy? Because you see, he spent his life touring around Eretz Yisrael, and he kept going on different trips. That makes him a yeshiva guy. Maybe it's Choni Amagel. Why? Because he went to sleep for 70 years. So the answer is, it's really Choni Amagel. Why? Because not only did he go to sleep for 70 years, he woke up, saw his chavrusa wasn't there, and went back to sleep. That's the joke. So I told this joke over to my son, and he says, well, obviously, Abraham couldn't be the real yeshiva guy. He's the one who established chakras. Anyway, be that as it may, Abraham establishes chakras, Yitzchak, Mincha, and Yaakov, Meiriv. Why? Because Meiriv is when it's dark. Meiriv is when you don't see anything. Meiriv is when you're waiting for the dawn. Meiriv is all about Golus. That was Yaakov, and that's Sukkot. It seems so interesting. We call Sukkot Zman Simchaseinu, a time of happiness, and yet it has this element to it of exile and of destruction, etc. Now, why should we go into Golus? I mean, of all the things, why do we go into Golus? You know, why don't we set fire to ourselves? Right? Which if we were Chayiv Sreifa, right? So you could argue because you can only do that one time. You know what I'm saying? Work that one out for yourself. Yeah? As well as we've seen for thousands of years, you can do it over and over again. Yeah? But the Michtam Eliyahu brings down an approach. He says it differently. I'm going to say it differently for two reasons. One is because I think I want to focus on this particular aspect. And the second one is I don't really understand what he's talking about. So, which is sometimes a problem. What's Avodah Zarah? Well, let's say this way. I'm going to take it a little different than he took it. But he says it's by Avodah Zarah, and he says it's by Sinas Kinnim, and I assume it's meant to include the other. We know the first Beis Hamikdash was destroyed for three sins. Avodah Zarah, Gilaraiyos, and Shrichos Damim. Murder, sexual immorality, and idol worship. The second Beis Hamikdash was destroyed for Sinas Kinnim. Hatred between people. And the result of those two activities, the three cardinal sins and hatred among fellow Jews, is exile. Why is that? What's Avodah Zarah? Avodah Zarah means that God is one. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Hashem is one. He is unity. He's everything. When you recognize Avodah Zarah, when you pray to a bunch of idols, you're saying, the sun has power, the moon has power, the wind has power. The earth has power, this has power, this, and also God has power. You've taken the unity of a Kodesh Baruch Hu and you've broken it up. What happens with Gilui Arayos? Obviously, it's meant to be one man and one woman, and a person who then takes that and divides it up among a bunch of other people. So you're taking that unity of the relationship and breaking it apart. And what Shrichas Damim? Shrichas Damim is to the point where I don't even allow you to exist in this world. Murder is one where I take away from you your right to be in this world. Someone who kills by accident because he wasn't careful about another person's life goes into Golus. He's exiled to a city of refuge, the Eretz Miklat. Yeah? Cain, as we'll read in Bereishis, the Shabbat, kills his brother, and he is. The decree that goes on to him is that he wanders the face of the earth. He's not allowed to stay in any one place. Golus, when you break that, those three aspects, that demands this type of response of Golus. What's Sinas Kinnim? Sinas Kinnim is creates hatred between the Jewish people, and when that happens, you break the Jewish people apart. That's like Avodah Zarah too, because Avodah Zarah, we know there's one God, and you break him into a lot of gods, and you know, Umika to Amcha Yisrael Goya Chod Ba'aretz. The Jewish people are supposed to be one nation, and when we break it apart, In all of those instances, what are you doing? You're breaking apart. You're destroying the unity. And when you destroy that unity, that's what Golus is. That means we no longer where we belong. We lose our place. We lose our home. We lose our possessions. We lose everything we know. You know, it's an amazing thing. You know, I moved to Israel 17 years ago. And of course, my whole life until that point had been in America. I think like an American. English comes to me a lot better than Hebrew. You know, culturally, I've learned to shove and push the same way that a lot of people in this country do. Well, I should point out. You know, I can do it to a limited extent, you know. But, you know, and how long has my family been in America? My grandfather came from Poland. So we're only there 2.5 generations. Not even. I was a half a generation. My grandfather was a half a generation. My father was there for one generation. So we were there 1 and 2 half generations. And for me to pick up and move to Israel was wrenching. Could you imagine a person who lived in a town for hundreds of years? And suddenly you leave everything behind. You leave your ancestors buried in the cemetery and just wander around. You hope what's going to be with them. What's going to be with your home? You lose everything. When you break things apart, the result is that we are broken apart. We lose our bearings. This is not in the sense of vindictiveness. This is because when you lose that connection and you appreciate the loss, you don't hate people so much. You know, when you don't have so much, when you have to depend more on people, when there's more of a coming together, that's the result of it. Okay, so that's one aspect of Golus. There's another aspect of Golus, and there's the concept of a Jew always living in this world, yeah, as being in Golus, even when we're in our place. What does that mean? Avraham Avinu is the first Jew. Avraham Avinu discovered monotheism. He stood up against Nimrod. He was thrown into a fiery furnace. We don't hear about that. We don't hear about that. That's not important enough. The Rambam tells us he had thousands and tens of thousands of students and when he was in Haran. We don't hear about that. Avraham Avinu, the first Jew, was introduced to the world with the following words, Lech Lecha. Go. Travel. A Jew travels. A Jew is going someplace. We understand that we are never totally at rest. Now, sometimes we forget this. Sometimes we forget it, and we set up institutions to the point, and homes, and societies, and places, that we start to think, this is the last stop. This is where we belong. And a Jew doesn't stop. Lech Lecha. We keep going. We're going someplace. We're going to Olam Haba. We're going to a completion. Time is coming to its fulfillment. There's a reason that the Haftorah you read this past Shabbos was all about Muhammad Gog and Magog, the final battle where all the nations of the world come against the Jewish people and are then defeated, and then the Messianic era is ushered in. Rabbi Avodah Zarah tells us that after Mashiach comes and all the nations of the world come to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and ask for their reward, and he said, you never did any mitzvahs. They said, give us a mitzvah. He said, he'll give them a mitzvah sukkah because it's sukkah. Sukkah is the time of Mashiach. Sukkah is the time of the completion of the world. Sukkah is when it all comes together. Why? Because sukkah tells us that we're traveling someplace. We're going somewhere. We're not just in this world. We haven't reached our destination. A Jew is a traveler. A Jew is a wanderer. A Jew is going someplace. And if you don't go someplace, if you just stop, you can't stop. What comes from that is Golus. Either we live as a Golus, Ger V'Toshav. We're a stranger and a resident. We're temporary in this world. We're going somewhere. And we have Sukkot every year to remind us. Well, we say in Sukkot. Why? Because when God took us out of Egypt, he put us in Sukkot, put us in little huts. Couldn't he have put us into big palaces? He could have created big palaces. That was no harder than making the crowds of glory or the moon fall from the heavens, right? He wanted us to be in little huts because he wanted the Jews to remember. Don't, doesn't matter what, where you live, where you go, you're temporary in this world. You're going someplace. You're going to a completion. We're on a journey. Mankind is on a journey. We're going to reach a destination. It's called Yemos Mashiach. It's not the world that we're in now. This is not the end. No matter how good we have it now, this is temporary. I want to take it a step further. The bulk of what I'm about to tell you now essentially comes from the Urgid El Yahu, who essentially takes it from the Sfas Emes. Okay? So I'm taking bits and pieces and adding it to my own observations, but more or less, you want to try to figure out where, you know, the source of these things are, that's where it is. And that's to understand, as I pointed out, the relationship between Sukkot and Shmini Atzeres, and how that all works. Now, I told you there are Shalosh Regalim. We all know that there are three major pilgrimage holidays: Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. Pesach corresponds to Abraham, Shavuos corresponds to Yitzchak, Sukkot corresponds to Yaakov. What does that all mean? What that all means is that there's something that Yaakov, that Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov gave to us. Each one of us gave us brachos, and those brachos continued. In other words, on Pesach we get into the brachos that Abraham gave us. On Shavuos we get the brachos that Yitzchak gave us, and on Sukkot we get the brachos that Yaakov got us. But there was one more bracha that we got after that. And that's the group participation part of the program. Moshe Rabbeinu, Zos HaBracha, says the Sfas Emes. Why do we read that on Shmini Atzeres? Because Shmini Atzeres is Moshe. There's three Avos, and Shmini Atzeres is sort of its own holiday. As I mentioned, we make our own Shechianu. It represents Moshe Rabbeinu. But it's part of Sukkot. We know there's a relationship between Moshe and Yaakov. There's a lot of different relationships between Moshe and Yaakov. Here's an easy one. Torah, 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 Tziva lanu Moshe, Marasha kehilas Yaakov. Uh-huh. That's why when you try to teach this little song to a kid, he keeps putting in the wrong name. Marasha Kehilat Moshe. No. Yaakov. Yaakov. Torah Tziva lanu. Yaakov. Moshe. You have to do this with little kids. You'll see. Anyway, but there's a relationship. The Torah that Moshe gave us is Kehilat Yaakov. Marasha Kehilat Yaakov. What does that mean? Shlosh Dvarim Olam Omed. Three things. The world exists. Torah, Avoda, and Gemilas Chasadim. Those three things correspond to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Right? Gemilas Chasadim is Avraham. He was the one who did the chesed. Avoda is Yitzchak. He himself was a korban. And Torah is Yaakov. Emes LeYaakov. Yeah? Yaakov is Torah. He's the one who goes and sits Torah. Yoshev Olam. He sits in the tent to learn. And he's the one who Moshe Rabbeinu brings down the Torah, but it was the Torah that was, the potential for it was Yaakov. There's a relationship between Moshe and Yaakov. That's the relationship between Sukkot and Shmini Atzeres, and therefore, there was brachas from Abraham, brachas from Yitzchak, brachas from Yaakov, and brachas from Moshe. And the Lashon of the Medrash, could you give me that? Medrash, thank you very much. The Lashon of the Medrash in Zos HaBracha is Shlohaya Echad Matchil Mimoket Shepasa Kadera. Okay, talking about something else. Ketan, Avram Birachas Yitzchak. He gives a bracha to Yitzchak. Etc., etc., etc. Omad Yitzchak Levorach et Yaakov, Omad. So Yitzchak goes now to give a bracha to Yaakov, Omad, Mimokum Sheposak Abba, Misham Ani Matchil. That's where I'll start from. Yeah? And he brings the posik of where his father left off, and he picks up from there. Omad Yaakov Levorach et Shvatim. Yaakov goes to bless the Shvatim. Omad, any poseach ella v'kriya shenema v'yikri Yaakov el banav, etc. That's where his father stopped. Amad Moshe levarech es Yisrael. Amad ani poseach any poseach ella b'zois, because that's where Yaakov left off. Yeah, v'zois asher diber lehem avihem. This is what their father said. That's where Yaakov finishes, and the Zos HaBracha is how Moshe starts. There's a bracha that Moshe Rabbeinu gives that's after the forefathers. That's Shmini Atzeres. The reason why we read Zos HaBracha and Shmini Atzeres is because there's a relationship between Moshe, between the brachas of Moshe, and what he's giving on Shmini Atzeres. Shmini Atzeres is different in another sense of the Shalosh Regalim. You could argue it's part of Sukkot, and then it's not. There's a mitzvah of Re'iyah. There's a mitzvah to go to Yerushalayim, to the Beis HaMikdash, on Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. Not on Shmini Atzeres. You don't have to go to the Beis HaMikdash on Shmini Atzeres. Why? Because what was the purpose of going to the Beis HaMikdash? Because there you would see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You would see him year end. Re'iyah and year end, the same words. Fear and see, as this relationship, you would get this tremendous insight into HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Nevi'im would get their tremendous insight from the Simchas Beis HaShoeva. You go to the Beis HaMikdash and you would, on some level, see God, whatever that means. It was an unbelievably powerful experience. Not on Shmini Atzeres. You didn't have to go on Shmini Atzeres. What did you do on Shmini Atzeres instead? You learned Torah. Why? Because that's what Moshe Rabbeinu taught us. And because he brought us Torah, Shmini Atzeres is the day where we can access the power that the Jews experienced on the three pilgrimage holidays by going to the Beis HaMikdash. We can access that on Shmini Atzeres when we learn Torah. There's a reason we made Simchas Torah on Shmini Atzeres. Right? It's a Shmini Shel Pesach, the seventh day of Pesach. Shmini Shel Pesach is obviously the seventh day of Pesach again. So we have Shmini Atzeres, and then you have Simchas Torah, like there's this new holiday. It's just Shmini Atzeres. Here we do it all together. It's so much different than America, you know? In America you have Shmini Atzeres, you get all the serious stuff out of the way, you do Yitzchak, you do Geshem, etc. And then Simchas Torah, you just party. Here you have to keep all of it together. So, you know, you have all the dancing, and you know, the chosin, Chosin Torah, Chosin Bereshis, then you go out for Yitzchak. Then come back for Tfilas Geshem. You understand? Shmini Atzeres and Simchas Torah is a very sacred day. It's very holy. I've been in America where it turns into shtick. People do shtick. People don't understand the difference between Simchas Torah and Purim. There's no mitzvah to get drunk on Simchas Torah. I have no idea where this idea came from. People getting drunk on Simchas Torah. There's no idea of getting drunk. There's no idea of playing shtick, of tying together the Chazan's talis, you know, which you can see in some places, stealing the Kohanim's shoes when they go up for I'm sorry, I see I'm giving a lot of people ideas. You go to America, I used to see this kind of stuff. It was shtick. Simchas Torah was like Purim. They didn't understand the difference. That's not the idea at all. Simchas Torah is a sacred day. It's Shmini Atzeres. It's a day where there's the power of Torah, and by dancing and celebrating and learning Torah, which is what we're ideally supposed to be doing. See, people, it's hard to see today. You can still find it in places. Where on Simchas Torah they dance, they celebrate, they sing with this glow. You know? People are often careful to make sure for Simchas Torah to be the same place that they were for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Because the dancing on Simchas Torah is the conclusion of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. It's the end of the Shalosh Regalim. It's the end of the whole process. The end of everything. It's one extra day. It's Moshe Rabbeinu. It's this power to use Torah to reach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So now, why Golus? So what does Golus got to do with that? So this is a very high and beautiful idea. What does Golus have to do with that? Okay. Do we have a commission? Thank you. There you go. An art scroll. This is the real one that Moshe got in there. He gave him this and an art scroll sitter, and he was all done. Only thing left to do was work out the code. Now, here's the pasuk. Second pasuk. V'yom Hashem misinai ba v'zorach meseir lomo hafia mehar paron. Har Seir is, of course, the place where Esav lives, and Har Paran is the place where Yishmael lives. And based on this, the Medrash says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu offered the Torah to all the nations of the world. He went to every nation of the world and asked them if they wanted the Torah. Says the Sfas Emes, he wasn't going to give him our Torah. It's not that we were going to get left out. We didn't spend 400 years between Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov and slavery in Egypt to get left out in the 12th hour. You know, it was, oh, I got bad news, everybody. Esav's getting the Torah. Thanks for coming. Take your money and go someplace else. You know what I'm saying? Of course not. We were going to get the Torah. But there is something in the Torah that is unique to Esav. There is something unique in the Torah that applies to Yishmael. There's something unique that applies to Moab and to Ammon. There's something unique that applies to every nation of the world. They have a chelik in Torah. Each one of them has the ability to be able to add something. We've spoken about this in Parsha Shirim, those who come, but Tefillin Shorosh are called Totafos. There's no translation for Totafos. Frontless is not a word. It was made up. It doesn't mean anything. Unkelis translates totafos as tefillin. You know what I mean? It doesn't mean anything. I always love it when you see the translation. They translate tefillin as phylacteries. Is that easier to understand? What are those? Tefillin. One second. Oh, phylacteries. Why didn't you say so? Sure. That's easy to access. Phylacteries. Yeah? So, Rashi tells us tot in one language means two, and sot in another language means two, and you put them together, it tells us there's four, and there's four parashiyos. Okay. Now, that means that what does that mean? That means that God was writing this in different languages? No. It means that in every language, there's insight. The 70 languages, which represent the 70 nations, and represents their culture, each one of them has an aspect of truth and Torah in it. In an ideal world, every one of the nations of the world would have accepted the Torah, and then they would have had their portion of Torah, and then they would have given it to us. How? Well, we built the Beis HaMikdash, and then all the nations of the world would have been drawn to the Beis HaMikdash, like metal to a magnet. And on the way, each one of them would have shared their own particular insight. Esav would have given us some insights, and Yishmael would have given us some insights. Ammon and Moab would have given us some insights, and every nation had their own little insights to share with us. However, it didn't work out that way. They didn't accept the Torah. They didn't take upon themselves to share with us the unique insights they should give us, that we should understand, that we should be able to use to be able to rally the nations of the world around the Kodesh Baruch Hu. So what should we do? If they won't bring it to us, then we'll have to go and take it from them, one way or another. Now, the Chaim HaKodesh says this concept slightly differently. He says, after the Chet of Adam HaRishon, sparks of holiness were spread all around the world. And everywhere in the world, there are little sparks of holiness. The Jews went into exile to collect those sparks, those nitzotzos. That's where we have to go into now. And we've been holy enough and done everything we could, then our power, our magnetism would be so powerful that we would have pulled those sparks to us. As it is, we weren't. So instead, we had to go into exile and go and collect those sparks. I heard this part many times when I was younger, when we would suddenly, you know, a teal or something, we'd stop in the marsh in the middle of nowhere. In the middle of nowhere. You know, like New Jersey or something, you know, someplace like that, you know. And we had to stop Daven Mincha. And they would console us afterwards and say, obviously there was a spark of holiness in this spot that we had to pick up by Daven. We go around the world into exile. Why? To collect those sparks, to collect the Torah of the nations of the world, and to bring it all back and unify it in the Torah the way it's supposed to be. That's the ideal purpose. And the Ogdayol points out, and he says, and if you look at history, you find an amazing thing. There were countries that were extremely hospitable to the Jews. Poland. Casimir the Great invites the Jews in. And to help us, to help him, you know, settle Poland and to build it. Right? And the Jews come there because, you know, we were happy to be welcomed in almost any place, even to Poland. You know what I'm saying? We even go to Poland, one of the most miserable countries in the world, from what I've heard. I haven't had the opportunity to actually go there. My grandfather came from there, and I haven't found anything yet that's strong enough pull for me to go back there. Everything I've heard about it, you always hear people say, oh, we go on the March of the Living, we go on this, you know, and the Poles spit at us and scream at us and, you know, throw things at us. And I was like, oh, isn't that good? You get to experience downright old world anti-Semitism all over again. Gee, I can't wait. What else can you tell me about it? The weather is always dark and dismal and miserable, and the whole place is ugly and disgusting. I'm on my way. You know what I'm saying? Yep, you should make a tour book. You know what I'm saying? That sounds great. So in any event, they invite us in, and we stay there. And he says, and we stay in a particular place, and then all of a sudden, after X amount of time, they throw us out. Why? And this happens over and over again. He says, because we went there for a mission, to collect those sparks, to accomplish something. And we finished that job, we're done. And if you're not smart enough to leave on your own, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to have somebody show you to the door. Your job is done. When we collect all the sparks, and we collect all of the Torah, and we bring it back, then we have fulfilled Golus. Now, how is this captured in Sukkot? This is captured in Sukkot in a very dramatic way. Because, you know, we offer up 70 par, yeah, 70 bulls on Sukkot, corresponding to the 70 nations of the world. Of course, we don't then offer up 10 a day for 7 days, which would seem to make the most sense. The first day 13, the next day 12, then 11, 10, 9, 8, 7. Yeah, that's one of the reasons that Musaf on Sukkot is so much fun. Because every day you have to try to find another one. Yeah? If you're in the Chutzlar, it's even better. Because then you get the little bracket thing. You know? So today we do these two, and the other day we do these two, and then these two, and these two, you know? And you have to, like, you know, remember, you know? And you get a different Musaf you have to lane, and you have to throw in two. You don't have that problem on Pesach. Pesach, the last 6 or 7 days are all exactly the same. On Sukkot, it keeps changing. We go from 13, 12, 11, 10, 9, 8, 7. Because as we bring in the effect of the nation of the world, they're minimized. Less and less and less and less and less. And then, Shmini Atzeres. Shmini Atzeres is no more going. Shmini Atzeres, we leave the Sukkah and we go back into our house. And you know how many pyre we bring? Just one. That one, Rashi tells us, is Keneged Yisrael. That one is for the Jews. Because now that we've taken everything out of Golus, now that we've taken all the aspects of Torah, the Kibim Ponim Torah, the 70 facets of Torah, now that we've taken all the sparks, we put it all together, we're finished. Then you enter into the final stage. Then you enter into what it's really supposed to be. And this has been throughout Jewish history. Yaakov goes to Laban. That's the first Golus. Yaakov goes to Laban. And he stays there, and he works real hard. And at the end, when he has all the speckled splattles and splickles and splished spark sheep, they keep making up new words for them. Splotched and sparkled and fleckled and stickled, yeah? I don't even know what there's words for them. I think they just make them up. Yeah? And after he gets all the sheep, how many did he have? 1.2 million sheep. 600,000 times two. And then he comes out. And as soon as he finishes his job, suddenly Lovin says, I don't like you anymore. And he senses that Lovin doesn't like him anymore, and he has to run away at night. That's it. Your time is done. We don't like you anymore. Time to go. And we stayed in Mitzrayim, and they were real, real strong about keeping us there. They didn't want us to leave. They felt very strongly about that. Yeah? It took 10 plagues to like finally convince them that maybe it might be a good idea to let us go. And when it was time to go, they chased us out. Get out of here. We had enough of you. We stay someplace. It might be comfortable. It might be nice. So we finish our job, and then they say, get out. America's a big country. Just thought I'd point that out. Anyway, so once you finish your job, it's time to go. Yeah? There's another relationship here. Sukkot is called Chagosit. That means to gather in, obviously. All of the produce is gathered in. We harvest our grain, and then we leave it out in the fields to dry, and then we bring it inside before Sukkot because it's going to start raining. But now it's all dried, it'll stay well, it won't rot. We take our figs, we slice them, we leave them outside so that they should dry. We gather them all in and bring them in our house. We press our olives and we make our wine and we make all of our stuff. And then we bring everything in. And our storehouses are flowing. Chagas. Obviously, it's more than just that. We gather together all the forces. We gather together everything. Shmini Atzeres. What is Atzeres? Atzeres means assembly. Atzeres is also a time of bringing everyone together. What's the difference between Chag HaAsif and Shmini Atzeres? Chag HaAsif is bringing together all the power of the world into the Jewish people. And when it's done, we bring the Jewish people together. Now there's no more Avodah Zarah. Now there's no more Shechit Davim. No more Gilead Radim. Now it's us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that beautiful Rashi. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, stay one more day. Stay one more day. Don't leave. Just me and you. You know, I bring the mushroom all the time. And, after a chasana, at a wedding, you know, everybody's all dressed up, and the family is all, you know, shaking hands and seeing all the relatives and all the friends, you know, and finally everybody leaves. You pack up everything, you get home. When you get home, you just want to take off your shoes. And take off your shoes, you want to undo your tie, you want to just relax, yeah? And then, you know, all the fancy food that they wrapped up that was left over from the wedding, now you finally get a chance to eat. And you sit together, just the family, and you schmooze about the wedding. Oh, you remember this, remember that. There's nothing that is as intimate and so beautiful as that. It's just a family. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Sukkot, we entertain the nations of the world, all 70 of them. Now that's over. Just me and you. Stay one more day. One more day. Just us together. That's the power of Shmini Atzeres. That's the power of Sukkot. And that's where we are now. We're at the very end. We're now at the seventh day of Sukkot. The power of the nations of the world have been gathered together. We have sucked all of the holiness out. There are big people who say we're at the end of time. There are big people. If you want to listen to all the various predictions and things, you know, those that predict big things for this year, I don't know. Supposedly what Kaduri said, there's going to be a whole string of natural disasters this year, and the safest place to be is Eretz Yisrael, and things are going to start swirling and going on. You know, what happened to New Orleans, that was nuts. Pakistan, what are they up to now, 40,000 dead, an earthquake that started the world, started this year, landslide over there, Hurricane Wilma heading for South Florida. You know, it so far have been measured as the most powerful hurricane ever measured. I don't know. I can't tell you what's going to happen. I'm not a prophet. You know, you hear things, but who knows? But there are big people who say we're getting towards the end of the process. We've collected all of the holiness, we're collecting all those last pieces that need to be collected. We gather it all together. And then on Shmini Atzeres, we take that and we unify the Jewish people. And when we unify the Jewish people, we unify ourselves in the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We take the Torah, and we, as the Jewish people, as one, we dance, we make a circle, and we dance around with HaKadosh Baruch Hu as our center. As the Gemara tells us, we'll be at the end of time, and all the tzaddikim will form a circle, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be in the middle. That's where we are. That's the time of year that we're at now. We have a power to access that now. We do not have a Beis HaMikdash. We don't have that ability to be able to access the power through that. We can access it through the learning. The fact that we spend this night learning, this is the end of Sukkot, the preparation for Shmini Atzeres. Hoshana Rabbah is the day that brings us from the end, from that end of that process of gathering everything together and bringing it all in, to the unification of the Jewish people. The power we have is by learning Torah. And when we learn Torah, when we understand that that's the means of us being able to reach its inspiration, since the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, says the Gemara, all HaKadosh Baruch Hu has is the Dalet Amos of Halacha. All we have now to be able to reach that level of inspiration, to be able to see God, to be able to experience HaKadosh Baruch Hu on the highest level, the only way to do that is by learning. So what better way, of course, to come out of Shmini Atzeres than to continue vacation for another week and a half so people can learn absolutely nothing. You know that? Which is an anomaly. It really goes back to the fact that, you know, people used to spend this time traveling back after the holidays, getting back to the yeshivas and whatnot. I've told the story in the past, you know, people asked, someone says the Chazon Ish, he says, you know, how much did I learn during vacation? Not yeshiva now, which I learned. He says, well, then you're like a balabos. You're like a regular working man. So the rabbi makes a cheshbon for you, Mishnah Torah. He says that a person should work 3 hours a day and learn 9 hours a day. So during chofesh, during vacation time, you're like a balabos. So you only have to learn 9 hours a day. So he writes back and says, I don't learn that much during yeshiva time. Then do it during vacation time. But that's because we're missing the point that by learning Torah is the means for us to gain this understanding and appreciation. There was a time that I was learning with a friend of mine who's a big Talmid Chacham. He's into a lot of very, very deep concepts. And we were both working at the time for Discovery. And and I remember we were talking about certain ideas. And it was going deeper and deeper and deeper. We were taking it further and further and further. And it was just so inspirational. At the end, he said to me, you know, I can't believe that anybody's impressed with the codes. Because that's supposed to impress somebody. Look, I counted 49 letters and I spelled, you know what I mean, Skippy peanut butter. You count down this way, it says, stick to the roof of your mouth. You know what I mean? That must prove there's a God. You know what I mean? If we study Torah, we see the depth of Torah. You go down and you understand the deep meaning behind it. It fills you with a sense of awe, with a sense of wonder. And Rebecca tells the story. He says years ago, you know, he'd asked for Brooke, the famous Muslim. He says, "How do you prove to somebody there's a God?" Tell him, "Do you think you're smarter than the Rambam? Think you're smarter? You look at Mishnah Torah. You think you're smarter than the Rambam? And the Rambam believes in Hashem." He says, "What if they never heard of the Rambam? Never heard of the Rambam? Grace, I don't know what you do. I don't know, you know. But the idea is that a person who learns Torah." And you learn it the right way, and you see the brilliance of it. How everything connects. I've told this story before, that Moshe Shapiro, he does this still in England, but he used to do this Motzi Shabbos, and his Talmidim would come over, and everyone could ask the kashan. One kashan. So this one asked in Halacha, and this one asked on a Gemara he was working on, and this one asked from a Zohar, and this one had Kabbalah, and everybody asked one question. And when they were all done, so he gave one shear that answered all the questions. All the questions were tied together. Because the beauty of Torah is that everything is united. Everything comes together. And the more a person sees the brilliance of Torah, there are times that I go to Shiur, and you walk out, you want to make a bracha. Asher bracha bonu mikol amim v'nosam lanu ester esay. It's unbelievable. You can reach a level of inspiration that is incomparable. There is no other way to achieve it. This Shmini Atzeres, there's no mitzvah of going to the Beis HaMikdash. The mitzvah is by learning Torah. The mitzvah is through the brilliance of Torah, the mitzvah of Moshe Rabbeinu. When we achieve that, then we're going to be able to see that beauty. What are we be learning? When you dance with the Sefer Torah. When you dance with the Sefer Torah, how I love the Torah. And you sing the songs, you understand it, you develop that love for it, and then we take that opportunity, use that opportunity to learn it the way we're supposed to. The Mirza Hashem this year, we will gather together all those sparks. We won't need any more golus. We'll have reached out of the golus of Sukkot and into Shmini Atzeres, back into the home, back into the Beis HaMikdash, and take all that kedusha from all the nations of the world and all the Torah of the nations of the world and everything that's there to be able to reach finally our destination. Amir Tasha.